WLFE DB Radio.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
MetalMayhemROC.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
And now, welcome tonight's host, John the Vernomatic Verno.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's show. A lot of celebration tonight, as today we taped this. It was 3 years ago today that the very first Metal Mayhem ROC podcast dropped. So this is our three-year anniversary. Props to us, and to celebrate that, we have a brand new website, tons of exciting things in 2022, and the guys right here with me are my backbone. We have Metal Walt from the metal capital of the East Coast, New Jersey. Walt, how are you, my man?
Hey, Berno, move that head out of the way. Show the listeners that beautiful new logo for the website.
Yeah, this is something we got going on. You're going to see it all about. Again, we're excited. And the other part of this triplet, Ian O'Rourke from the band Motor Lord, Central New York. Ian, how are you, my friend?
What's up, my brothers? I'm glad to be here again. Celebrating a three-year anniversary, I'll drink to that.
All right. Well, we're celebrating tonight the history of metal, 1987. You know, the hair explosion is completely out of control. Aquanet is moving off the shelves. The boutiques on Sunset Strip are making, you know, generational money. And we're here to share all the nitty-gritty. Guys, what do you think about 87? What are you looking forward to covering? Walt, what are your thoughts before we dive into this?
Well, as I ended the 86 episode, I did say that it was the changing of the guard, and then it's at the highest point where the Sunset Strip bands and the East Coast bands, the ones we call the hair bands, they're the top. And now 87 even takes it to a higher level. And as I said before, you know, maybe none of us or the listeners are really into Bon Jovi, but that Slippery When Wet album from 86 really was a statement album, and you can see that the bands coming in 87, such as Def Leppard and Aerosmith and, you know, Whitesnake, they just followed that same format, and they were right up there in top 40. And you just see a lot of it. It continues into 88, and it's not to say that's all there is, because there's a lot of other great material, but it really is all about those hair bands, the American and the MTV scene. That's what it is. That's the highlight.
Ian, your take? What do you take out of 87?
Yeah, the one thing, I mean, that definitely holds true is, you know, one of the albums and bands we're going to discuss does kind of signify the death knell for that hair grouping.
You know,
the hardest part with the whole name of it is it's very consuming of anything that had any kind of populace. And not every band fell into that, but they kind of got lumped along the way. So as we go along, we'll see where there's that separation. And this one band specifically kind of, you know, that's not us.
Now, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of bands at this point releasing EPs, full lengths in 87. And, you know, it's such a task to whittle this down to what are we going to talk about, and we've done our best. So we've come up with about 20 bands that we're going to profile tonight, and to help keep the show moving in a nice flow, I've put together some timers. It helps myself along with the guys stay on course. So the first bit we're going to do, Walt and I, with a little interjection of Ian, we're going to tackle some of those American legacy bands, Aerosmith and Rush. So we're going to put 2 minutes on the clock, and we're going to cover what they had to go. Let's go. Aerosmith, Permanent Vacation, the comeback album. They were riding the success of the collaboration with Run DMC. This is the first album, the full length after that. What was on there? Hangman Jury.
You had the singles. Dude looks like a lady, Angel, and Ragdoll. I mean, that in and of itself, right?
Yeah. Was Dude Look Like a Lady on that album?
Yes, it was. Okay. Remember, that was rumored I think it was written about Vince Neil, right, from the prior year. Oh. I think Steven Tyler wrote that because Vince Neil in Motley Crue with all the makeup kind of looked like a girl.
Yeah,
and true. They changed the title.
I saw the tour. I think I still have a tour shirt down in the archives. I enjoyed it. I know Ian's not a big...
I did too. Listen, it was their comeback album, and this was the first of the second part of their career, right? And yes, they did go pop. Yes, they went in the MTV way. But for the next 10 years, they were a rebirth band, and this is a solid album, not just because of the hits. Art's Done Time. I mean, that song, Hangman Jury, is awesome. It's bluesy. It's got some swampy. Good album all the way around. Love it.
Rush, Hold Your Fire. I like the album. A lot of good stuff. Hold Your Fire, Time Stand Still, a little different kind of Rush. Ian, we got about 30 seconds. What's your take on Rush, Hold Your Fire?
Hold Your Fire, the one thing I did appreciate about it was it's a little bit of a return to a little bit more guitar-involved rocking, you know, that's going on with the Rush. It's a little bit more of that evolution of the sound. It's a great album, though. I love it. I hold it dear.
I'm a big Rush fan, and I love 4-10 and Time Stand Still, but it's not in my category of best Rush albums. Good, but it's not in the top.
Fair enough. Let's go overseas and catch up with the British invasion. Sabbath, Dio, Ozzy. We like to call it the Sabbath family tree. Let's get 3 minutes on the clock. Walt, you're big on this. What do you got?
Let's start with Sabbath themselves, The Eternal Idol. Killer album cover. I mean, again, this was out of the, let's say, the problems in 86 on 7th Star. They took Ray Gillen, who was the touring singer, brought him into the studio, basically wrote and recorded a whole album with him writing the lyrics and singing. And then he leaves. They scrap the demos, and they basically, out of desperation, because they had to get a singer in, the manager knew of this gentleman named Tony Martin who was from the area. They brought him in. He had a week to learn the songs, and he sang on the album. And we just interviewed him about a month or two ago, you know, and it was but it's a solid album. I mean, The Shining, and it's just a shame. It's really not an album that is remembered, but really, really good one. They didn't tour all that much for this one. It never even got out of Europe. I think they did about a dozen shows, and that lineup was over. But definitely a good, solid release. Go and check it out.
Now, I'm guilty as well as probably a lot of Sabbath fans, because by 87, you know, you had the breakup with Ozzy. You had the first stint with Dio. He leaves, and then, you know, there's this inactivity. And then you have this whole, is it Ray Gillen in the band? You know, so by the time this came on, people didn't trust Sabbath. That's what I'm trying to say. Ian, what's your take on any of the Sabbath?
You know, I have grown to enjoy the album. At the time, I was kind of, you know, separated from the Sabbath camp. You know, it wasn't by any kind of design. It just kind of, you know, musical changes, things happened. But I did go back and rediscover it, you know, and I mean, that the Tony Martin era stuff is really great material. You know, the worst problem with it might be, you know, some of the questionable production values. You know, there's a lot of added keyboards and stuff like that, but it's still really good material.
Dio, Dream Evil. Talk about keyboards. It was now, what was that lineup? Dream Evil, was that the 16-year-old?
No, that's not Roland Robbins. It's still Craig Goldie.
Oh, okay, that's right. I always mix that up. I didn't mind it. Dream Evil. Didn't have the song "All the Fools Sailed Away."
It was fucking awesome. Great epic song. All the Fools Sailed Away.
It's a solid album. It's like one of those Black Sheep Dio albums. Not one you remember. It's a solid one. It's just one of those ones off the charts, but you look at it. Dream Evil, Sunset Superman, I Could Have Been a Dreamer. Good album. Good songs.
Sunset Superman is such a killer song.
It's just not one that he's known for. But as time went on, he revisited these songs in his tours. In the early 2000s, he was doing a lot of the material, too.
And if anyone remembers from the old MTV days, this was the concert where during Craig Goldie's guitar solo, he shoots lasers out of the end of his guitar at the giant spider that's coming down above him. It's fucking epic.
And he did take Sabotage out on, they took Sabotage out on the road of this tour too, which we'll talk about that later.
Right.
I got 30 seconds. Ozzy tribute. His, Toast is that Respect to Randy Rhodes. a lot of older stuff. I enjoyed the album, but the thing is, I had that old King Biscuit Flower Hour cassette from years ago.
It was a great album, but it was just in the wrong year. It was an old show from 6 years ago, and they put it out like it was a new Ozzy release, and it was on MTV. Right. Good album. I just don't think it was worth calling it out for this year. It wasn't new material.
I just got to say quick, it's one of those albums. I had a girlfriend who had it on vinyl. She taped it for me. I wore the tape thin. You couldn't even hear it afterwards because I listened to it so much. Rhodes was just a monster, man.
The marketing on that was incredible because they built up the story so well to say, hey, look what we found in the archives. Now you're going to hear it again for the first time, never to be heard. From 86. They perfection in the marketing on this.
Yep. Gene Simmons probably was in the background helping them.
Speaking of Gene Simmons, we got a double dip. Kiss Crazy Nights in the Ace Frehley first solo. Crazy Nights, it was like we said on one of the past episodes, it was the bad color scheme on their stage.
Come on, that's a guilty pleasure song. I love that song. How could you not love that song? Come on, guys.
Jeez.
Reason to Live, you know, on MTV, the ballad. Who didn't have a girlfriend in 87? Your Reason to Live, that was a Reason to Live. I mean, I cranked this in my 76 Buick Skylark, my first car. I had the cassette in with Frehley's Comet all day, every day. The tape would flip over, saw the tour. Uncle Ted opened up. Awesome time.
Ted did open up. And
so 3 days before that Christmas was a at the good Meadowlands. Show. So, yes. But overall, not a good album. I agree.
No, but they have Frehley's Comet. I love that album.
Yeah, Todd Howarth in there, and oh my god, good album.
Rock Soldiers is great.
Breakouts on there. Fractured Mirror. Fractured Mirror is
a great freaking instrumental. I love it. Was into it and not into it at the same time. You know,
but it was his again. Yeah. He came out. It was him. Ace was back. He got on MTV. He was a headliner at the club level. He was smart. He brought Todd Howarth out, who could sing the songs. He could sing the Kiss songs.
Yeah.
He was back on. It was good. And it's a great album. The Todd Howarth material is really, really strong. And it was a good piece.
Anton Figg was on drums.
I will say that at this particular point, in this particular year, Ace was definitely out hard rocking Kiss. Yeah. Kiss had totally gone pop. Ace was out there. All fucking eight cylinders pumping hard.
Ace is back, and I told you so.
So,
and then the follow up, didn't they have that EP?
Yes,
that live came out.
Oh yes,
yeah. That was a great one. Did I see that tour? I have seen that tour.
Beacon Theater with Y&T and White Line opening.
Well, look, you're doing our homework for us. Y&T, it was next on the list. Let me get 2 minutes on the clock with Y&T. Dave Menichetti, Leonard Hayes, Joey Elves, Phil Kenmore, the classic Y&T. Love the band. Ian, you're deep onto Y&T. What's your take on Contagious?
Contagious, to me, the sad part with it is, and a lot of it happened, it's because of the timing of everything, things that had gone on. By this point, they had kind of, the record company had kind of directed Y&T to be a little bit more pop-centric. But Dave Menichetti still never did not deliver solid kick-ass hard rock. I mean, the song Contagious is fucking killer. Everything about the album is still Y&T, but to me, this is almost kind of like a bookend after those great albums up to this point. That's the hard part with it.
Yeah, I agree. Good, perfect. The bookend statement, Eyes of a Stranger, I'll Cry for You, that end the album. Awesome with the title track. Good, strong album.
Yep.
Well, now that we're covering some of that, let's do a little Hair Nation. Right. Cover this real quick. I'm going to go 3 minutes, maybe a little long on this, but Motley Crue, Girls, Girls, Girls. Now, we've done the whole Crue chapters on each of these episodes. You know, they start out punk, they get metal, they end up glam on Theater of Pain. Now, Girls, 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 their fourth. This is their fourth album.
No, it's the fourth.
What ordered? Yep. Yeah. And now what? Now what are they? They're bikers. They're driving around on bikes and denim and leather. You know, the thing, the reality of the crew is they really weren't that good. You know, a lot of those songs you listen back to it, Girls, Girls, Girls.
Well, you had Wild Side and Girls, 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 which were the featured tracks. They were all so overplayed, you didn't have to worry about the other eight songs. And there were, what else is on that album, right? It was all about those two songs in the videos.
Yeah.
All in the Name Of.
All in the Name Of is on there, yep. Listen, documentary Inside Metal, one of the phrases that Don Dokken himself states in the documentary is when he listens to anything that is Motley Crue riffs from Too Fast for Love, Shout Out to Devil Going Forward, he remembers a lot of those riffs in the old band Vendetta that Mick Mars was in beforehand.
Wow.
You know, Mick Mars is a significant part to the songwriting and the sound that they have. So, you know, I mean, they're trying to look tough and significant again. It's not far removed from, it's closer to their actual ideology than fucking Theater of Pain for sure.
Oh Jesus. My God.
You know, I mean, that was like, you know, Pete Way got drunk and threw up on himself. It was terrible. You know, so.
Yeah, they're blatantly ripping off Steven Tyler.
I'm looking here. It got to number two on the charts. Whitney Houston was number one. They got to number two.
Oh, it was huge.
That'll tell you.
That was MTV was at its heyday. Wild Side and Girls Cubed. It was on the hour. Yep.
Girls, Girls, Girls is one of those songs still to this day. You go to a fucking strip club, they're still playing fucking Girls, Girls, Girls. Just like Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yeah, I know. let's see. Faster Pussycat, not much to say. You know, they had that one video on the bathroom wall or whatever.
They were sleaze rock, L.A. Sunset Strip, you know, the Rainbow Bar, the whole nine yards, Tame Me Down. I mean, just sleaze rock, right? Bathroom wall and cat house battling on and on and on.
Yep.
Just, they were like the B level of the hair bands, right? You had the A category, the B level, and the C. But they've still made a career out of it, and this was probably worth a little shout out. Let's give them some credit.
Well, we'll revisit Sunset Strip a little later. We got a couple more. Oh, let's get a little heavy. King Diamond, Abigail, and Sabotage. This is great shit. Well, we'll get 3 minutes on the clock for this one. Walt, you and King Diamond, what do you got?
Like I said, this is just another, it's another legendary album, and, you know, the family ghost, think of that. Again, the song, right, or just the story behind it, you know? It takes place in the summer of 1845. A couple arrives and seven horsemen tell them not to move into the house because, quote unquote, 18 will become 9. They don't need the warning. They move in. The first night, Jonathan meets Count de la Fay. The family ghost is the seat relative. The great shows him in a casket and a corpse of the stillborn child, Abigail. There's the whole storyline, right? It's a horror movie. It's a Stephen King book. It's King Diamond. But look at the album cover. Killer. Killer.
Yeah.
Not a fucking bad song. Not a bad song on the whole album. Period.
It's the imagery. The imagery.
Mickey D is a fucking monster on the drums. You listen to this whole thing, it's just, I can't even, there's no words to express. It's just a fantastic album.
Yep.
Well, you just talked about all that imagery and everything. I saw the tour in a sweaty club that the cap was 500 people.
Yeah.
You know, the stage was the size of this desk, but we didn't see any of that. Not like the later tours with the theatrics, but ours, you know, there was the summer of 87 driving around. I remember.
Can you imagine that? Like, think of the King Diamond album. Now that we're talking about that compared to Girls, 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 what? Like, what contrast, right? Like, oh man, you know?
We got a couple minutes left on this. Sabotage. Let's get into Sabotage. Ian.
Okay, so Chris Oliva, I've gone on record. I've said it before. One of my influences. Love him. This was the launch pad that would inevitably become Trans-Siberian Orchestra down
the road. Paul O'Neill was brought in to produce this album.
This was the marriage made in heaven where you had the Oliva brothers and Paul... Yep, and Paul O'Neill getting together.
24 hours ago, Beyond the Doors of Dark, Legion, Strange Wings, White Witch, right? Like, just the songs, the title track, killer, metal. Dio. They opened up for Dio. John was fat. He was the Mountain King on stage. Huge up there. 600-pound John. Right?
At the time, I think he was only like 250, but yeah, okay.
You know, people that are out there listening to this and they're not really watching the video, Ian and Walt, they're just, they're so excited. They just, you know, they've been excited for 2 weeks.
Ian's drinking beer and I'm drinking coffee, but I'm playing my wah-wah pedal. Get it? Wah-wah.
There you go.
Wah-wah.
Or
wah, wah, wah. Hey, what do we got here? Let's do a little loose ends. Satch, Joe Satriani. Ian's the I get his take first. He's the guitarist of the group. Surfing with the Alien. What do you got?
I was talking sidebar with Walt quickly before we went to tape, but this album specifically, but anything that Satch had touched from Not of This Earth up to this point, he pretty much reshaped how a lot of the instrumental guitar rock albums were done. His phrasing and his melodicism of the way that he does songs is very much like a vocalist singing, and he does it on purpose. And then he rips into these freaking amazing solos that just completely melt your face. So
it's the songs on this album. You remember too, when he released Not of This Earth, he went on media saying, wait till my next album. It's going to change the course of this kind of music. He knew what he was writing. He knew he had a masterpiece in him. Look at the album cover, the Silver Surfer, the red cover, right? The imagery, but just the songs in and of themselves. Satch Boogie. He's got MTV airplay, Ice Nine, Crushing Day, you know, like Lords of Karma, heavy, heavy stuff. His go-to, this is his pinnacle album of his career. And he's put a lot of them out. I saw this twice. Right. On this tour. I was in an underage club called Bottom Line in the City. Got in twice underage and saw it. And he ended up joining Mick Jagger's solo band. And I saw Mick Jagger come up and they did Red House at the Bottom Line. I was about 4 feet away from Mick Jagger on this show. Yeah, it was killer. Totally killer album. Great one.
Excuse me, what venue was this? Bottom Line
in the Village in New York City. It's no longer there. Was a legendary club.
Yeah, listen, awesome. the ballad that he had on there, Always With Me, Always With You, they played that goddamn thing like crazy on even the top 40 channels, the adult contemporary.
Yeah.
For like
those are the songs they were on around the 2:30 mark of MTV around, right? Because MTV went from 1 to 3 or 2. They were on about 1:30, 1:45 every time. But at least they were there,
right? Yep. Satch is fucking man.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. What were they doing on MTV?
I think they played the videos, but you wouldn't catch Satch. They would put him on Headbangers Ball, but they would be on like hour three in the last 30 minutes of it. Right.
Or
they carry him back.
Right. Or like Guns N' Roses, where it would be like a Thursday night after 120 minutes or whatever stupid show at like 3 in the morning. They didn't play it during the mainstream, you know, during the Poisons and the Motleys and all these other bands.
So. How much did we dislike 120 Minutes? Matt Pinfield's a guy from my neck of the woods, and I fully respect the guy now, but at that time, I hated that shit.
I hated that show. Awful.
That was like punks, punk music, freaking whatever it was, crap.
No. That was like Pearl Jam, REM, turd music is what it was.
Good thing we're not trying to expand our audience. I know. I hate that shit too. Fuck that. Either it's you're with the us or end you're out of the here.
World and we know it.
Well, on that note, let's get fucking heavy. Exodus. Fucking Pleasure of the Flesh. Second release, trying to follow up Bonded by Blood with Paul Bailoff. Pleasure of the Flesh, first album with lead singer Steve Souza.
Zetro.
Interesting little tie.
Zetro. Zetro Souza.
Yeah. He leaves the band Legacy that turned into Testament that we'll cover in a minute, and he joins Exodus. They had some killer songs, Brain Dead, the title track, Seeds of Hate's a cool song, but it was tough because – How do you follow up Bonded right. by Blood?
Tough part too, though, is, you know, you look back and you see some interviews now that have occurred with Gary Holt. All those guys had some like major drug issues going on. And yeah, that was something that kept throwing the brakes on every time they would try to get something going. You know, somebody would get arrested or somebody was in rehab or blah, blah, blah. It's a great album. You know, the song Pleasures of the Flesh, love it.
Here's a, we did a special on the Metal Mayhem ROC podcast a couple years ago, did a three-parter on the Lakeshore Record Exchange, big metal record store up here in Rochester, and the owner, Ron Stein, told the story. I asked him, what bands were cool, which were, you know, he goes, I'll tell you who the biggest pain in the asses were, was Exodus. They came to town, and they had a radio show on the weekends that Lakeshore underwrote, and so they're going to do the interview, and Ron told the manager, all right, these guys got to be cool. You know, it's just like, we're going to be on live radio. And the manager's like, yeah. On the way to the radio station, they stopped and got three, like, 12-packs, went in there, were cursing, were yelling and screaming, and, you know, they had to cut the interview short. So this just, you know, backs up your story about those guys being druggers.
Listen, musically, there's a lot of great stuff that they have there. Personally, when Gary Holt talks, he's one of those people that I personally could see punching in the face.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, they came back the next year with, you know, Fabulous Disaster and redeemed themselves. And talking about that Testament, they had their debut, the Legacy. The First Strike is Deadly, Over the Wall, great band. And one little other note, Overkill, Taking Over. Now, Walt, Overkill, they're from your part of town.
New Jersey all the way, Green and Black all the way, Taking Over, man. Look at the album cover. The guys just in the front with their guitars pointing out. Like, exactly, right? But, I mean, let's look at the tracks. Deny the Cross, Wrecking Crew, Power Surge, In Union
Power We Stand,
Electro Violence. In Union We Stand, come across the land, In Union We Make the Final Stand. I mean, come on, all metal all the way. Killer album. Every album from Overkill's killer.
That's the killer lineup. Rat Skates on drums. Last album with them. Bobby Gustafson on guitar. Fuck, when he left, they had to get two guitarists to take him. Dee Dee Verney and Blitz. Now, Dee Dee and Blitz are still in the band, and they have a new one coming out. They still put out killer shit. Yeah,
they've been pretty consistent, man.
And it was the beginning in this year. I was looking here too. They also, like, these bands were spinning now. They supported Megadeth in Europe. Then they came back and they headlined, and Testament opened up for them. So it was starting to grow that whole genre on its own, right?
Yep.
Well, now they're legacy acts.
Well,
no, in the metal world, they're, you know, the younger guys. Sure. It's just like, these guys have respect. Huge. You know,
They're like they're the next four. They're one of the three bands we just talked about. Out of the big four, they would probably be 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, easily.
And
then, you know, I mean, the thing is, what's the name of the winged skull, you know, the guy there, the Overkill mascot? Does he have a name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does.
Oh, yeah, that guy?
I forget it off the top of my head. Yeah, it'll come to me. It'll come to me.
Now, quickly, Walt, you didn't, now that you mentioned the next four, and some think Death Angel from the Bay Area would be in there, and they had their album, the Ultra Violence. Fun thing with these guys, that album, they're all under 20 when they made that album, and the drummer, Andy Galeon, was 14.
Like, and their tie or something and, like that, when, like, the last song on that album, I remember giving a tape copy, and they're speaking like back and forth in like Thai, and you're like, what did they say?
Yeah, I think the track Kill Is One. Yeah. I think that was the name of it. And you know, Evil Priest was on there. Man. And
there's a little fact check. The name of the Overkill mascot is Chally, C H A L Y, Chally.
Good boy. Yeah.
All right, well, what do we got? What do you guys want to talk about? White Lion. You guys are big White Lion fans. And now, oh, they're Long Island, aren't they?
Sort of. I mean, you know, Mike Tramp is Danish, actually. But, yeah, yeah, they're New York fans. Vito Bratta, Staten Island boy. And then you had James Lomenzo and Greg D'Angelo, right? But, I mean, Ian and I and a lot of my friends, we love this album. I mean, this was our... This was a great album in 87, and it just had a combination of really strong guitar playing, good singing, and a lot of variety in the songs. I mean, yeah, you had the ballad when the children cry, the MPD song, but, I mean, Lady of the Valley, that was a very in-depth song.
Yep. And then you had Hungry, which was kicks off the album. Now, people that know me know that I like a good riff, and that fucking riff is killer. Yep. And I'm telling you, go out and listen to that song because that's something you need to hear. It was unfortunate, like I'd mentioned before, that there's a lot of bands that get lumped into, and a lot of it had to do with the way that they dressed or the imagery. But these guys were not your hair metal band.
No,
these
guys
were just a good fucking solid hard rock band. Had some metallic tinges to them. They put out some great material. The songs, if you go into their albums and you look beyond what the popular songs were, these guys put out some great shit. And Vito Bratta, I'm sorry, that guy's a freaking monster.
If he was in a band nowadays, they put out three albums in their whole career: Fight to Survive, Pride, and then Big Game and Main Attraction. I mean, they were over before they were even out there. And Vito Bratta's now out of the industry altogether. Out.
Okay.
He took over his father's hardware store.
Now, we got a few left, and at the end of the show, and we got the big guns, you know, some more thrash, and then the real big ones of 87. There's three, and we'll wait to get to that. But we wanted to go back to Sunset Strip and cover Dokken and Great White. We're going to put a buck 30 on the clock. I'll let you guys handle this one.
So,
Ian?
We all know I'm a huge Lynch fan. Back for the Attack, great fucking album, top to bottom, okay? Starts off Kiss of Death, okay? You've got Burning Like a Flame, you've got Mr. Scary, you've got Dream Warriors, you got Heaven Sent. There's so many freaking songs on here, but do yourself a service and go and check the songs that were the B-sides. Lost Behind a Wall, Sleepless Nights. I mean, this is just a freaking great album from top to bottom. And then you've got Great White with Once Bitten. This was Lady Red Light, Rock Me. This was the launch album for these guys. They had already put out great material, but this was the launch album. And from that, I'll kick it over to Walt because I know he's got some opinions too.
Yeah, and I think I think what you said was perfect about both of them. The Dokken was a big one, right? They got several videos out of this one on the back of the truck on Burning Like a Flame and Dream Warriors from Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just another band. You know, it was just they were another band at that time that were big. You know, so definitely both of those bands are worth a call out. Absolutely.
Metallica. That's Metallica, the 598 EP, and a double dip of Anthrax. We're gonna put 3 minutes on the clock on this one, and I'll lead off with this 598 EP. All covers, you know, they dip back into the new wave of British heavy metal stuff. Diamond Head, Budgie, Misfits, a couple other ones on there. But it was Jason Newsted's debut, if you will. I love the album to this day. It's one of my just press play from Helpless into the Small
Hours. I got something to say.
Yeah, I agree with you for the five songs that are on there. I mean, Metallica loves to dabble in old, new wave of British heavy metal covers. And you know, to this day, these songs are all played in their set list. They usually come in an encore with the Last Caress out there at the end. And, you know, it was cool. Yeah. And I love how the idea that they intentionally, you know, made sure that they kept the price at $5.98 so that they wouldn't rip off the kids. You know, they basically said something like, "Is if they try to overcharge you, steal it, we'll back you." So, very, very cool stuff. cool stuff there. So, and then we were going to talk about Anthrax, right? So, Anthrax, you had what?
Well, one second. Now, Ian, you want to interject on Metallica?
What he was saying with the price sharing was, you know, that was all Lars, and James. You can't deny the power of just that one little fucking EP and what it had at that time, because this is after Cliff died. This is after Master of Puppets. And it was just those songs. But like our Walt had said, you know, I mean, they really, every band that they ever covered, they just made them popular, you know?
All right. Anthrax, Among the Living.
Segueing off Metallica, number one, they dedicated the album to Cliff Burton and Metallica. So you can see the friendship and the bonding was starting there. And, you know, you started to see in this album the humor. Anthrax has always had a really funny humor to themselves, sometimes how they dress, how they act in some of the songs that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But the humor was starting to come out here in some of the songs. And this was the one that got them above that level. They were on a higher threshold here. You know, I mean, this is an album you go back to: Among the Living, Thought and Homage, Shine of the Law, NFL, Indians, like it's 6-7 classic Anthrax songs all the way through. It's a must-have staple thrash album.
We literally had a party spot that was called the Mosh, and it was called the Mosh because of Caught in the Mosh out in the, you know, the edge of the woods behind this freaking park. And, you know, this is such a huge part of my teenage juvenile delinquency that, you know, I mean, I just, you know, there's nothing about it that I don't love.
Do you think it's held up well? Yeah. Yes. Because sometimes you...
Because whenever Caught in the Mosh or Indians comes on Sirius XM, it's still fucking just slays.
And if there's any band that's going to get away with wearing jams, it's Anthrax.
I think you need to reset the clock, Vern. We got to talk about I'm the Man.
Yeah.
Can I have 1 minute on the clock, please?
Yeah.
Listen, you got they a follow minute. Up Go later, ahead. Experiment. They come out of a rap metal song. Look at the album cover in front of a wall with graffiti. They're wearing Run DMC type suits. They appreciated that stuff. It was a nod to the Beastie Boys. They used the Havla Nagila Jewish wrist because two of the guys in the band are Jewish, rap metal thing in place. And I give them credit for that. It was unique and they had balls to do it and they did it well.
Listen, I'll the only thing I will say negative against it is the fact that I blame them for ushering in the rap metal craze that was to come down the road.
When the 90s came, I ignored all that shit. So I liked the Anthrax stuff. So, all right, listen, we have three more. We're calling them the big guns. But I just want to remind everyone to join us on Monday nights for our live radio show, Metal Mayhem ROC Live on Metal Devastation Radio. 3 hours of metal. I host it. There's a chat room. Ian's in there. You know, we talk stuff. It's a real good time. And also visit our new, brand new website, MetalMayhemROC.com. It's totally interactive. There's tons of shit. There's profile pages. You can see what both Ian and Walt, what they're up to, what they look like outside of this. Brief history. I'm on there. Some of the other correspondents. So check that out.
Our biographies are amazing. They are. They're so much in depth. You'll get to know us. You'll get to see our sensitive sides. You know, you might bring a tear to your eye. And guess what? I look the same in my profile picture as I do here.
Yeah.
Well, plus there's those pantsless pictures that we did too, you know. So I mean, you know.
Oh, that's the pay feature.
Oh, the pay feature. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. So, all right, we got about 6 minutes left, and I'm gonna get 5 minutes on the clock. We're gonna start Whitesnake, the self-titled, fantastic release. David Coverdale, John Sykes was in there. Well, recorded or wrote something like that. What was that?
Recorded and wrote.
Yeah. Great album. Here I Go Again. Bad Boys. Children of the Night.
They were not an entity really in the States, if you think about it, in 87, right? They were mainly a British band, right? They were, but this one, they became an American respected band. And you think about what happened. Right. By the time the songs were written, you know, Sykes was out of the band. Don Airey was out of the band. Cozy Powell was out of the band. In came Adrian Vandenberg, Vivian Campbell, Rudy Sarzer, Tommy Aldridge, the big hair, the whole image. Now they're an MTV band, right? They were an opening act in 87, but they were certainly a year later, they were an arena headliner. I mean, how can you not? And he had the smarts to re-record Here I Go Again, that was originally on, I think, one of the albums in the early 80s, Still in the Night and Is This Love? Like, I mean,
yeah, it was, yeah.
Man, the awesome album.
Yeah. Yeah, Burning
Fool for Your Lovin' was on that earlier Whitesnake album, too.
Yeah, but that was on the next album that Steve Vai was on the remake.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, Here I Go Again was written, Bernie Mars that wrote it back, Saints and Sinners, I think it was, 81. Listen, if David, you know, egomaniacal person that he is, or at least listening to Geffen Records and all of that shit, if he had kept that band, you're talking John Sykes on guitar, you're talking Neil Murray on bass, you're talking Ainsley Dunbar on drums. I mean, the band itself was pretty much nuclear.
They were.
You know, and this is not to discredit any of the guys that he toured with. You know, Tommy Aldridge is a monster. Vivian Campbell's a monster. You know, Rudy Sarzo, you know, he is what he is, you know, but I mean, you know, I mean.
Well, let me ask you, why pivot from
those guys? Because the other guys were the sexy guys. They had the MTV image, you know?
Right.
They brought them out into that mainstream
thing. Think about it. Yeah. Yeah. Look at it in respect to Ozzy, okay? Ozzy, when he had Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman, had Bob Daisley on bass. He had
Kerslake
on drums, and then Randy. And that right there, I mean, that's another monster freaking band. But
the ego of
Sharon and the management, nope, we can't have anybody sharing the spotlight. So we got Tommy Aldridge, we got Rudy Sarzo. Yeah,
and they brought that image. Ozzy, and then Coverdale wanted that sex image. He was up in the front and center. You know, he's freaking, you know, crotch shots of him and pulling his balls and shit like that. I mean, he loved himself. And he's made a career out of this 30 years later, right? Yeah. He has the best musicians up there with him.
Yeah.
He's the focal point, but he doesn't do the hard work. His band does the hard work. And that's what happened in 87. No. In 88, they were even bigger. Yeah.
But I'll never knock him for not being he's a decent musician and he's a great singer. He has a very keen ear for melody and tone. And even as he's gotten older, even though he can't hit all of the notes, he can still hit most of the notes. He does a really good job. So go ahead. Come on.
Def Leppard, Hysteria.
I can start this one.
One of the biggest albums. Yeah.
But I think of where it's.
Well, hold on. It's one of the biggest albums ever.
I think they said it's something like statistically, in America, it's number 51 on the all-time album sold across genres, every type of music, history of recorded music, number 51. But think about how it got there, right? And I talked about this on you know, Rick Allen's bus accident where he lost his arm. He changed his style of drums.
Yep.
It went more electronic, single, you know, not heavy metal drumming that put him more in the pop area. Simpler songs, more melodic, more airplay, more MTV, bigger success. And when the album came out, I saw them in New Jersey when it, like a couple of months after it came out, I think it was September of 87. The arena was half empty in the beginning. I saw them because I wanted to see Tesla open up. They came back a year later with Queensryche opening on Operation Mindcrime.
Right.
They did three nights at the same venue. Look at that. In 1 year, from a half-empty arena to three nights in the same arena, right? It was humongous. And they led with Animal was the first single. Think about that. Now, that's a good song. But when you think of that album, that's probably the fourth or fifth single in that. And that was number one.
Actually, the first single was Woman.
Woman, yeah. Yeah,
terrible for a second.
Right. Here's the thing, though. You know, Joe Elliott has gone on record and said, you know, when they got together with Mutt Lang after they did High and Dry, when they did Pyromania, he was directing them towards Michael Jackson's Beat It. And he was thinking more pop along the way when it came to their ascension. Okay. And that's what they did. This album was, I mean, you think about when they talk, what do they call it when you cross genres, you know, you're, you know, you do rock, you do pop, mm-hmm. you know, even country kind of thing. This is one of those mm-hmm. albums. They freaking everything. You couldn't turn on the radio, no matter what channel, without hearing at least something by Def Leppard. They were huge.
Yeah.
Just huge. Next.
Exactly.
Yeah. Guns N' Roses, the big guys, Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
A greatest hits album. I loved it. I remember, you know, it's I thought it was a great album.
Look where it started again. I will say this, right? Yes, that was a band percolating in the scene in L.A. for years. It wasn't like they were a new band. It was just they got their chance and they got signed and they recorded. It took them a while to get the album out. Yeah. And really, it was a slow build with them. It came out in 87, but then they didn't really hit stardom until 88. But what was it again? The 1-2-3 punch of the videos, right? Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City. And what was the third one? What am I missing, guys? But Sweet Child of Mine, right?
Sweet Child of Mine.
It took them that while to get out there, right? I saw them in the summer of 88. Aerosmith now is back up, and they were headlining. I saw them at the stadium, Giant Stadium, Deep Purple in the middle. Deep Purple in the middle. They played two U.S. shows that summer. Deep Purple was the only band, and they played Baltimore a week later. And they lit the upper stage in the football stadium. They lit a section of seats on fire during Smoke on the Water. Shit you not, real story. Look it up. But GNR was the opening act for this leg of the tour. So they got exposure off of Aerosmith and, of course, MTV at that time, right? I mean, so in 87, it wasn't a big album, but it was the start of it. By 88, if this album was released in 88, it would be not just number one. It would be number one and two. Two would be, the difference between one and two would be this big.
Yeah.
Listen, like Verno said,
they got huge overnight.
Like
once that dropped, right. Once Child blew up.
What do you guys think?
Up?
What made these guys different? Because they weren't really hair metal. They weren't glam. They didn't really have ballads either. They were sleaze. No. They got Faster Pussycat and LA Guns were kind of like them. What made them so great, guys? Tell me.
Right.
What I think made them great was they were sincere. Struck lightning in a bottle. Those songs are standalone great songs.
These guys, they've gone on record when it came to bands that they wanted to emulate. They wanted to emulate bands from the 70s.
I know Aerosmith.
Thin Lizzy, Motorhead, Aerosmith, mm-hmm. Rolling Stones. You know, they wanted to, it was that crazy dichotomy of hard rock, punk rock, heavy metal, pop. They literally wanted to engulf it all, but they wanted to make sure that they did it that was different than what other bands were doing. And then when you listen to them at the time, when they came out with this album, and this is, Welcome to the Jungle is a great song. Sweet Child of Mine is a great song. Paradise City is a great song. Go and listen to the other songs. Night Train. It's so easy. My Michelle. Okay? Listen to those songs. Those are the songs that are the freaking killers. Those are the songs that people that, like us, it's like, oh my God, Mr. Brownstone. That song, I never didn't know what Mr. Brownstone was. Somebody had to explain it to me. I was like, wow. These guys are fucking dark.
No, you're right. Each song had its own identity and just it was so each song was so great in its own way that you never
that's what
heard
made him
before.
Unique.
Yeah. Axel, Mine, and those songs that you heard a gazillion times. Sweet Child of Mine is a fucking classic song.
It is. And it's a well-written song. Here's another thing I'll point out to you. During a band discussion, talking about the song Rocket Queen, go and listen to the song Rocket Queen and listen to it when it goes through the change at the end and tell me that you can't pick out the early 60s, Dion, where can my baby be with that whole thing.
I think we should get one more.
They covered everything.
So we continue this. I was just going to say,
Go ahead.
You wrap this up.
I'm glad I asked you because you guys gave a great explanation. But look at the physical image, too. Axel with his patented moves, the back and forth, right? He had the red bandana. Nobody was doing that. Oh. And, of course, Slash with his hat and his glasses. Slash. Right? There was the physical element of it, too. Right? So I think we agree. Here's a tribute. I'm going to ask you guys a trivia question in this. Paradise City. What riff was rumored to be stolen? Did they steal from another song that could have been borderline copyright infringement? 20 seconds on the clock.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't think, brother.
Black Sabbath on the Born Again album, Zero the Hero.
Oh my God, yes!
Think about it.
All right, well, have to do our heavy metal homework.
I want you, when you end this episode and you say goodbye to the listeners, I want you to play 30 seconds of that riff from Paradise, and I want you to play 30 seconds of Zero the Hero, and I want the listeners to listen.
Zero the
to
Hero.
Now, is it the beginning of each song?
Well, I
the
think you've got to go and do your heavy metal homework and pick out the best, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Walt, what do we got for next year? Give us a little preview. 1988.
Yeah, 88 is, I mean, it's almost like bringing a little tear to my eye because there's still a couple years left in the decade, but 87 and 88 are kind of the pinnacles. Then you start seeing the change and the shift and the dying down a little bit. But, sure. I mean, 88, I think, is a more well-balanced year because, yes, you do have the continuation of the hair bands on top. Bon Jovi comes out with another big one. You know, but bands like Ozzy come back in and Metallica. So you got, I think, really some really great legendary metal albums that are a little bit more balanced this year in 88 versus what it would be in 87. Van Halen comes back with another one. Lee Roth comes back with another one. As I mentioned before, you now have the Monsters of Rock, maybe the first of its kind. Big festivals that weren't the Texas Jam. They weren't the US Festival. This was a traveling show that went through all the cities across the country, 5-6 bands. You know, something different in the Americas, right? Yeah. Scorpions came out with a very big, maybe their biggest rebound album, right? So I think a lot of really good stuff here in 88. It's going to be a good one. So I'm looking forward to picking this one apart, right? Picking this one apart.
All right. Well, hey, guys, thanks for taking some time tonight getting this together.
Absolutely.
We look forward to it.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're out of here. For Metal Walt and my buddy over here, Ian O'Rourke, I'm the Vernomatic, Metal Mayhem ROC. See you guys. Take care.
Later. Bye.
Metal for Life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.